the law. You don't like it, tough luck on you. Oivavoy, woe unto you that you create this kimpeton, this woman who just gave birth, you create all kinds of problems. Or this father who now has to hopefully stay up at night at 2 o'clock in the morning and worry about that child. All right, yeah, they were on formula. They weren't nursing that one. Okay, so he got up for the 2 o'clock feeding. Okay, occasionally there's one. Michael, you were next. You were saying.
He's getting up at 2 o'clock this morning.
He heard losing the first night she came home from the hospital. That was the last time he ever heard her.
Michael, you're next.
He woke me up the first time. That was it.
Your appeal to emotionalism, or you're putting emotionalism into this whole naming process, and bringing in the foreign influences, the German, the Hungarian, the Babylonian, the whatever, is so utterly abhorrent to me. And I can give you reason for it. I look at this European situation. I look at how you talk about Hungary and Poland, laughingly about others' relationship to Hungary and Poland, and excuse any Europeans here. I, Baruch Hashem, or unfortunately, depending upon how you look at it, was born of relatively Americanized parents, one of them purely American and one basically American by the time I got to her. And to me, this tie with Europe, with these pagan, Christian, Nazis and communists and all that, is nothing. It's a thing I'd like to get away from rather than come to. Babylonian, the superstitions, the junk that has come into our Gemara, the fact that I can't walk with three people or with two people, I can't walk, or whichever way it goes, because there might be an evil eye watching. Comparing it to the Yerushalmi, which doesn't have similar thing, I don't know if it has that part. This whole thing of superstitions, and let's get rid of it. Let's do what my Christian friend in the office does. Go have a restoration movement. Go back to our beginnings, our Loshana Kodesh. Like, you didn't like Yehuda Lay. You wanted Yehuda for a name. Good, stick with it. What are you changing your mind for? Other things I'd like you to give in on. Not on that.
I'll tell you why I've mellowed in time. I was an opinionated whippersnapper when I first met you. But for the last 15 years, I've seen what has happened to you. And I see that I was wrong in taking you down the road of cold rationalism. Simple as that. I denied you some things. Then again, if you don't like that answer, I'll tell you a second thing. Do you know of any system that is perfect? Any computer language that's perfect? Any program that's perfect? Perfect. That solves all the problems? Well, let me tell you something. The way we implement halacha is not perfect. But one day there's going to come a person like you and say, hey, Rabbi, you have an imperfect system over here. So all this kedusha that you are ascribing to halacha and your Jewish way of life is bunk. Because look at this superstition, and look at this nonsense, and look at this inaccuracy, look at this gap in the continuum, in the chain of tradition, and so on and so forth. Look at these influences from Bovel, and from Poras, and Yovan, and Modai, and so on. It's worthless. Let's look for another way. And let me tell you something. It's going to be very difficult to convince the person that maybe 98% of what we do is Torah Hashem Tumimos, Meshivas Nofesh, is the pure and the holy and the unadulterated inspiration of HaKadosh Baruch Hu throughout the ages. And occasionally we have a little Mishigas. We're entitled to a little Mishigas. But how's about worrying about that which is not Mishigas and that which is sanctified, and leave it be? Every time you eat a walnut, you complain to the Rebbeinu Shlomo that it has an ugly nut. Every time you eat a coconut and get into the inside, the sweet inside, you worry about the ugly wrapping in which it's in? Or do you worry about the essence? Last time you ate a pomegranate, if you like it, or an orange, or a grapefruit, or a watermelon, you worried about the ugly green rind, or you worried about what was inside? Now the watermelon is not entirely watermelon, it's got an ugly outside. An irrelevant, a disposable, indispensable outside. But on a cold day you wanted that watermelon, oh, but I say, good. Did you worry about the pits? You didn't worry about the pits. You were able to overcome it. You lived with the pits. And you spit them out in a very...
The pits were there before. You're adding it. I go over, turn on a radio in the morning on my late... I was late to work today, so I turn on the radio and they had the atomic shear. And he's doing the Yiddish.
He's doing it every
morning, I know. Why in the world does he have to do in Yiddish?
So she can understand it in the car and you can yet learn the language.
Who wants to?
You don't, others do. That's the point. And today, there isn't English? Why wasn't art scroll invented? You see, if we went ahead and completely disregarded your needs, that's one thing. There's a telephone over there. Okay?
4-7-3-2-1-5.
If you were to disregard your needs, that's one thing. But we don't disregard your needs. We go ahead and we invent an art scroll. And we talk in English. But the German who came from Germany is entitled to hear his language. The Polak is entitled to hear her language. In this case, Yiddish. Because how is there going to be a meeting of minds and hearts unless there is a certain kind of confluence of familiarity, of togetherness? How do you know?
Most of the people who...
Why do I have to, because of your cold insanities and your particular circumstance, erase, ignore, neglect, and disregard 1,000 years of culture? You don't have enough cells in your body to be able to go ahead and conjure up the number of tears that flowed in rivers because when a Yiddish word was heard, when a Yiddish song was sung. And the Arab is any different, so to speak, to quote the Jewish Arab. What, Ladino?
Okay, very good.
Which is nothing more than a jargon of Spanish? How can I go ahead and disregard it?
Because you don't know Yiddish.
Okay, well, this is it. And also, you're American. If you lived in another country, you wouldn't rest for a moment unless and until your English, your child spoke your language, your native tongue, your English. So what? Why are you blaming Yiddish?
Because it's born in Yiddish.
Okay.
This far.
Okay.
They didn't know Yiddish.
I said to someone today, he asked me in the car, and that's why I was late tonight, did you see this week's Allgemeine Journal? Because he's looking for an ad, he's looking for something that should have been in there. I said, I don't see it until Friday night. My son buys it and reads it. You know, you remember what I did with my father 30 some odd years ago. When I was a teenager, 14, 15, I told him, you better start learning how to read Hebrew well, because in 10 years you won't have a Yiddish newspaper. At that time there was the Tog, there was the Morgenjournal, and there was the Vorwitz, those were three, and then Freiheit, which was the communist Yiddish newspaper, and a couple of other periodicals, and he used to buy them all. I used to go get it for him. And he looked at me and he smiled and finished. His grandson is reading Yiddish. These are gut issues, these are emotional issues that we can't divorce ourselves from. But I don't cut you out either. You, the cold rationalist, has to understand. If you will deem something to be mishigas, insanity, or if you will deem something to be a foreign influence and totally irrelevant to your Jewish experience, the only thing I ask you is ask a shayla to make sure that your observations and what you check into is correct. That's all. What you get your claws into, just make sure that it's correct, that your perception is correct. And if we'll do that, we'll be able to exist. Can we learn a little more on page 11, the third paragraph? Lochein anachnu b'nei Yisrael. We started out by saying we really don't know what the reasons were for civilization giving names to people. But we, lochein anachnu b'nei Yisrael, we Jews are entirely different. Ha'olchim b'derech Hashem, walking in the ways of God, and have such a passion for continuum, for tradition, that which our forefathers did. We have several reasons that motivate us to name a child one way or another. Because einu shein la yeled, when we take a child and name him or her, all of our orientation as a people, all of our emotions and thoughts of a people come to the fore. That's rigashenu, and our emotions especially. Rikshei toda, emotions of thanksgiving, lishe'avar, for the past. Rikshei tikva, the emotions of hope, ubakasheli atid, and the hope that there be a future. I'll explain that in a minute. Al yedei kriyas Hashem, by calling someone by one name or another, mibiyim toda, we express our thanks. Lo Hashem yisloach bevad, not only to God, ela lifamim, but sometimes gam li b'nei adam, to humanity, to people, sherotzim lechabedom, that we want to go ahead and honor, ulehanziach zichron, and perpetuate for eternity their memory. The simple example was Alexander the Great. Alexander is a Greek name. But look at what this Greek ruler did to Bnei Israel. The Gemara tells us he came and he saw the Kohen Gadol in Yerushalayim. And this Greek ruler, emperor by 33, having conquered more than anyone else in the history of humanity, goes ahead and falls on his face in front of an old bearded Jew, the Kohen Gadol. And when they asked him why, he said, every time I go to war, I saw a face like yours in my dreams. And when I saw you smiling at me and I saw your face, I knew I would win the war. Now I know who appeared to me. You, the Kohen Gadol. You know what message there is? That your God gave me the right and the sanction to go rule over three empires. And look what happened to Greek culture, as it affected the whole world and as it affected us after his empire fell. He died at 33, and three divisions had to be made of the empire. And after that, Greek culture was never the same. It was past its heyday. That's why we named children Alexander, in such incredible thanks, to memorialize a man who could have taken us and wiped us off of the face of the earth, but saw in us something that was not his bag, was not his cup of tea, but nonetheless inherently saw truth there. No? Is Alexander any different than Mordechai? Or Moshe? So let's go on. L'anziach zichron la'avoseinu, our forefathers, l'anshei mishpachteinu, also to memorialize members of our family, Ligdolei Umasenu, the greats of our nation, Bichayehem Ubamosom, while they live and while they pass on. Do you know how many children were named Ichimaya, Yitzchok Meir, after the Gerer, the first Gerer Rebbe? There isn't a Polish family that doesn't have a Ichimaya in it somewhere. There isn't a Lubavitcher family, Russian Lubavitcher family, that doesn't have a Shneur Zalman, that doesn't have a Menachem Mendel. These are Lubavitcher Rebbes. Do you know when a Jew, some of you old timers know, Morris Rosenfeld, Olav HaSholem, from Bikur Cholim, comes to me and says, you know whom I'm named after? I'm named after the Sasseva Rebbe. Moshe Aryeh, Rabbi Leib Sasseva. You're talking about from the giants of humanity, let alone Chassidish Rebbes. You get caught up in your Zionist fervor, and you want to name someone Golda. Interestingly enough, she never changed her name to Zahava. And how I laugh when we sat at Board of Education meetings of Hillel Academy, whether we talk Havara Ashkenazis or Havara Sfaradit. Mm-hmm. All right, and I simply ask them, do you know how Golda Meir spoke? The Prime Minister of Israel at 71. What are you talking about? She's an Israeli. She talked like an American Ashkenazi who never knew the difference between a sa and a ta, and an a and an o, because it was natural to her. She spoke like she did in Milwaukee 70 years before. And Ben Gurion spoke like a Russian. Okay? Simple as that. Simple as that. But who wouldn't name, what Zionist wouldn't name a girl by the name of Golda? Alright? Simple as that. Henrietta Zold, every Hadassah for 50 years was named for this woman, Henrietta Zold, and her Zionist inclinations. how many people. Begin names his child after his mentor, Zeev Jabotinsky. The only thing is he had two mentors. The other one was Binyamin Herzl. One was Zeev Jabotinsky, and the other one was Herzl, Binyamin. Okay? You know what you do with a Binyamin? Binyamin didn't know the difference between an aleph and a beis. Herzl was a totally assimilated Jew. He had 3 years to become the Herzl that he was until he died at age 43. You know how many Binyamins, how many Herzls there are? Herzl. Herzl is a German word. Herz for deer. Not from Herz, but Herz. Herzl is a deer. Zvi. Zvi Herz. Or Naftali. Herz. I mean, how can you divorce yourself from that? You know how many children are named Yisrael Meir for the Chofetz Chaim? My Daniel is named Elchanan after Elchanan Wasserman, the immortal saint of a student of the Chofetz Chaim, who was here in 1938 just to beg for help for the yeshivas in Poland and in Europe, went at the behest of the Chofetz Chaim and was begged to stay here. He says, no, medaf mechbolten. And he expired with his yeshiva saying a shir in Baranovich. I mean, how can you not name after someone? Okay? It's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. But you want to invent a name, Hedy? Go ahead. Do it according to guidelines. There was a name that sprung up a couple of years ago in Israel. There was an anti-culture movement, a counter-culture movement like we had in the 60s here with the hippies and the yippies and the yuppies and the muppies, whatever it is. The counterculture of the 60s sprung up in Israel also. There were Jews who did not want to carry the name Yisrael. They wanted their original roots. You know what their original roots were? Canaan. Canaan is the cursed son of Noah. Who would name a child Canaan? That's what they wanted that name. Now, needless to say, you've got to understand it. You don't have to agree with it, but you've got to understand it. So for us, there are these issues that we hold sanctified and we hold holy. Abner Zarura was thankful for his experience as a citizen here. And when he came to the United States of America, he had a new lease on life from Iraq, you know, primitive society, through Israel, where he was starved to death. He comes to America and he strikes it rich. A little boy, young boy in big time. There's a president of the United States by the name of John Fitzgerald Kennedy. His son was born that year after Kennedy died. His first name of that child is Chaim be'ivrit and Kennedy be'anglit, in English. They call him Kennedy. Does that have any more sanctity than Spencer? All right, or any of the other names, whoever it is, doesn't. But how can you strip the meaning and the intent from such a name? It's as powerful as an Alexander or any one of the other names that we will go ahead and accept.
In what way?
And so I tell you clearly, I've changed my mind because I'm better than a decade down the pike. Now, if you ask my advice, only Hebrew names. Okay? But if you don't take my advice, I won't send you a bill for it.
Why did Tanakh name children after ancestors in general? They always gave reasons.
First of all, no. First of all, in Tanakh, that is not true. There was a feeling of ancestral continuity. Yes, you cannot say that. But the true answer is that in Tanakh, what seems to be in Tanakh, that is, that we were more creative. Okay? Now, David HaMelech only has 6 children reported in Tanakh. How many children did he actually have? And how many did he name after his grandparents? And how many did he name after all the others? Okay? Now, if you're running a sideshow here, The tragedy is that we cannot put it into our permanent record. So for Mr. Paco, more than anything else. Okay?
You don't want that.
You think it's not there?
Yeah. Well, it's good. After that,
I
think. There are all kinds of guides to names. I have as many as 6 major works on Hebrew names throughout the ages. They were all written and compiled because of the ultimate problem that we have with the get. The get is, we have our expert here, Natalie Binyamini, without question, is the acknowledged expert. She, by virtue of 14 years of working in a certain office. Every time we had a major cultural change, a shift from Europe to Slavic countries, a shift from Slavic countries to American, the American scene, the Israeli scene, and so on down the line, we have needed a major listing, a substantial listing of all the new names. How do you write John in a get? There is no J in Hebrew. And in a get, the halacha is that there may be certain inaccuracies, but if there is an inaccuracy in the name, in the date, in the venue, the place where the get is written, then it is possible you have to write another get. And if you make a mistake again in that, you write it again until 100 gittin are written the right way. How do you write John?
It's interesting. You write it the Ashkenazic way, and there's a Sephardic way of writing.
Okay.
It depends if you're an Ashkenazi or a Sephardi, and that's how the name has to be written.
And if you're a Sephardi and you land up with a get over here and your name was spelled Sephardi way, but I'm an Ashkenazic way, and that's the John or the Jeanette, is it acceptable? And do we establish that you are Sephardi? What happens in 4 generations from now when Sephardim have long forgotten that they are Sephardiot and we have such a spelling? They don't know Sephardi from Ashkenazi, from Chinese. These are all the questions that we worry about. But they're there. Names? I have encyclopedia of names. I don't know of any other society that has it. Come, let's take a look at some quick halachos. Go to page 17. Page 17, Mi Rashai Likros Shein Layeled. Who is entitled, who is permitted to call to give a name to a child. Here it says Yeled, but it obviously means Yeled V'Yelda. It means a child. And the halacha is clear. Ha'ava Aim Rasha'im Likro Shem LaYeled. It is the job of mother and father to call name. Ach Bizmaneinu, however, by now, and by virtue of our experience, Nispashet HaMinhag, the Minhag has become universal. Sherishus Kriyas Shem HaBechor, that the oldest child, Shayeches le'imo, is named by a mother. Rishus kriyas shema yelad asheni, the second child, Shayach le'aviv, is named by the father. Even though on the announcements it's written Mr. and Mrs., Mr. first, this time it's Mrs. and Mr. U kriyas shema yelad ashlishi le'imo, and number 3 once again is mother, v'chein hola, and so on and so forth, b'se rugin, alternately. The evens are to the father, the odds are to the mother.
What happens with twins?
Hold on. The Ein Nachon. Well, that's it, obviously. Alright, who's the first one? The Ein Nachon Likro Shein Letinok. It is improper to call a child by a name given al Yedei Echad Mikerovav, given by another relative, or al Yedei Sandok. Or the Sandek who holds the child for bris is the biggest mechutin, is the biggest Baal Simcha. He gives it, and you'll see why in footnote Chof Aleph, mipnei, for the reason שהקדוש ברוך הוא מזמינו בפי האב דווקא ולא בפי אדם אחר. Because God gave the right to the mouth of a father and a mother to do it. Okay? Simple as that.
Where
back upstairs.
You can tell me where you get all
this
stuff.
Oh, he has the sources. Every source is mentioned on the Bible.
I mean, I haven't learned it in the Torah and the Chumash.
Oh, it's not in the Chumash. But it is derived and extrapolated starting from the Chumash and continuing in the Gemara. But it's more recent.
But in the Chumash, it was the women who gave the name.
So who says that a woman can't give a name?
It says the father.
And a father didn't give a name in Chumash?
To her children.
And there weren't children who were called by Yaakov, who were named by Yaakov?
Yeah, but they didn't follow the pattern, so why should we
choose them today? And that's why he says Bismanenu. The pattern as it evolved now. I don't care. There is no machlokas as far as this is concerned. Alright? There's one exception, however. Zesha Amanu Sheha'ein Kodemes La'ov Bikriyat Shem Hayele. That which we just said, that mother takes precedence over father in giving a name, is correct. With one exception where you have a problem. Dafka b'mkom she'ein adavar pogeya b'mitzvah skibut ov'ein. If the wife, if the mother insists on one name, and that is going to create an estrangement between the father and his parents, there is a problem. Again, it's a paradox that is created. And that is, my parents want a certain name, and they're pressing me, and I have to go tell them no because Leah has this one, on numbers 1 and 3. This is an odd child, not an even birth. Okay? And my parents are going to press. And when my mother wants something, she gets away very quietly, like water seeping in. You never know it's there, but all of a sudden it's there, and you've got to confront it. Sounds like some other mothers, huh? Some other fathers. Simple as that. I'm talking about my mother. She smiles her way in until she gets what she wants.
You just told us before to keep the in-laws out of this.
Woe unto an in-law or a parent that knows this halacha, or that doesn't know this halacha and has to tangle with me. To go ahead and to take a son and to have to come in between a son and his wife? There've got to be better ways. So ultimately he writes correctly. 1, 3, and 5 belong to mother. 2, 4, and 6 belong to father. And he started out by saying, don't you dare, if you're a grandparent, if you're an in-law, don't you dare stick your nose in. I know it's tough. And I know there are emotional issues that are going to be brought up. I know you may have a resentment for decades thereafter, but that's your grandchild no matter what you call it. No matter what. Page 19. The last two lines of the top. Im aim hayeled kira'ala shame. If mother assigns a name to the child, and afterwards ba'aviv, father comes home, let's say from a trip, she gave birth while he was away in Alaska, the koralo shame acher, and wants another name. Okay? Shame shenatnalo imoika. The name that the mother gave is the basic one. Now that's one opinion. Yeshamrim, there are those who disagree on this and say the exact opposite. Sha'av yachol lishanot et shmo. That the father can change the name.
What if it's the mother's turn of naming?
Oh, so how do we adjudicate these two positions? Ultimately, we come back to the formula, Ephraim, and it's whose turn is it? Because if we're going to fight, then we have to set down arbitrary rules. If we can come to a meeting of the minds, then we have no fight. You'll give a little, I'll give a little. This will be one name, that'll be another name. But we'll see what's what. But when we get down to the nitty-gritty and there's going to be a fight, then we have to simply lay the law down. Top! It's not your turn, or it is your turn. whichever the case may be. And finished. Huh? Let's conclude here for now, in view of the fact that we stopped a little late, and we will finish off the naming of children with some interesting circumstances when we meet in Yetzer Hashem on the fourth Wednesday of this month.